The following is a production of Art Trap Productions, brought to you by the Gallifreyan Embassy and has been made possible by supporting subscribers and donations from listeners like you.
Live from a bachelor pad on Titan 3, this is Doctor Who Podshock. Doctor Who Podshock.
Okay, well, let's do it.
No, I...
whatever it is, if it's valuable, send it to us.
For the best in all things Doctor Who, it's Doctor Who Podshock, the podcast all about Doctor Who, the longest-running science fiction television program, with Louis Trapani.
Hello.
Ken Deep.
Hello.
James Norton.
Hello.
News.
Fabulous.
Reviews.
Oh, no.
And fan mail for James.
Over 40,000.
Doctor Who Podshock from the Gallifreyan Embassy.
You know, that guy James was really cool. Oh, yeah, we blew that.
I'm the Doctor, and who are you?
The Gallifreyan Embassy presents Doctor Who Podshock, episode 170. My name is Ken Deep, alongside Mr. Louis Trapani.
Hello.
And way alongside Mr. James Norton.
Hello.
And way it's alongside. Yeah. It's good
days
to be back.
Before Waters of Mars.
Yes,
the
hours.
Eve of the Eve.
Eve of the Eve.
The Eve of
hours,
the Eve.
If it's like 48 hours or 44, whatever we have. We're on the eve of the broadcast, the British broadcast of Waters of the Mars, and there's a lot of anticipation, a lot of interviews and things. David Tennant's done the talk show circuits in the UK this past week.
Mm-hmm.
And there's like six more previews that the BBC will release before now and then. I've stopped watching them. I just said, okay, I had enough. You know?
I can't keep up either.
But I'm all set for it on Sunday. I'll watch it then, but I feel like, you know, we've seen enough already. Let's just see the whole, you know, show.
Yeah, yeah. And I don't want to particularly be spoiled anymore.
Yeah, I know. There's just so much out there now that it's all right, enough already. I'm drowning in the waters of Mars, and it hasn't even aired yet.
Yeah, we're already starting to hear and see some things from the finale as well. Mm. David Tennant's two-part finale at the end of the year. We haven't even had Waters of Mars yet.
Yeah, well, what do you think about it?
The publicity machine revved up for the end of December.
Yeah, yes. It's not that far away, really, when you consider, well, particularly when you consider that we've been waiting 8 months for the Waters of Mars. It really isn't that long until David Tennant's season's finished.
Yeah, we're, what, about 6 weeks away? Today's what, the...
Less.
The 14th, or 13th. Today's the 13th, so...
I think it's like 5 weeks away.
Well, Lewis, as you speculated, I've heard that the Children in Need clip is the opening.
The first 2 minutes.
Christmas special,
probably,
yeah.
It is. Oh, I heard the opposite. I heard that it was going to be a clip from sort of the... like what they did last year. With the preview clip of
yeah, that's what Ken is saying.
Yeah, just, I think it's going to be
the opening few minutes leading into the opening credits, I guess.
Yeah, because I heard a news report. I can't remember where I read it somewhere over the past week that they weren't going to show the first few minutes of David Tennant's last few stories because it's too heavily plot ridden.
Mm-hmm.
So they were going to show something in the middle,
okay.
A snippet, in effect, which is what they did last year with the Christmas special.
Well, last year they showed the first 2 minutes of the right before they went into the credits.
That.
Yeah,
right.
It's him with
Next Doctor.
Mm. Yeah, I can't remember the character's name, but who was
Jack? I think.
Yeah. He thought he was the Doctor, and he had the screwdriver, the physical screwdriver.
Yeah.
Non-sonic edition. It's sonic.
Yeah, Jackson Lake.
Yeah,
that's it. I could only remember the first part, Jack, but there we go.
I think we're going to name the pool at Gallifrey Jackson Lake. Is anybody heading over to Jackson Lake for a swim?
That's a good one, Ken. We'll remember that. Hopefully the weather will be a little bit better this year.
Last year was not conducive to swimming, no.
Well, we're saying last year. It's still 2009.
I know, it's still this year. Last
we're closer to the next one than we are to the last one.
I can't believe how much closer we are. It's incredible. We're literally just weeks away now.
It doesn't seem like... Oh, it seems like only a couple of months ago that we were all there. Christ.
Time is going by too quickly, yes.
Yeah.
Well, we're all set. We're going. We hope you're going, too. And it's a Los Angeles Marriott Hotel, Gallifrey 21.
The airport hotel, yeah.
Airport, yeah, hotel. There are still rooms available at the convention rate, so you want to book your rooms with that special convention rate. Go to Gallifrey1.com for information on that and the code for your discount code.
Yes.
Yes, if you're booking your hotel room online, there's still good seats available, as they say in the concert world.
And you still can register for the event, but you want to register early. The registration, you know, goes up as the date gets closer. So I think
they utilize the pre-registrations for booking purposes. They know how big the convention can be based on the pre-reg. And to be really honest with you, the more people who pre-register, the better the convention's going to be. So
yes,
it's a win-win for everybody. You save a couple of bucks. They know how many people are coming, and that's a great thing.
Yeah, and they get to sort of throw their financial weight around if they already have a bit of cash in the bag, as they say.
Absolutely, and join us for our Sunday morning tradition as well. Podshock live on stage at Gallifrey with James Lewis and myself.
Indeed. Some guests. Interesting guests.
And
as well.
Surprise guests.
And a
I hope so.
Surprise or two, perhaps. So you definitely want to catch it. And we're having a meet and greet the day before, the Thursday night before as well. So definitely, if you are.
It's an official, unofficial Podshock meet and greet.
Officially.
In the lobby, right outside Champions.
Yes.
Beverages are a must. As people will gather around, and we'll just be basically hanging out and socializing.
Have we set a time for that yet? Is that 10 p.m.?
We haven't officially set a time, I don't think. I think we've kind of mentioned that 9 or 10 p.m.
Well,
as we get closer.
A chance for people to settle in, maybe have dinner, and you know,
take
and
a nap if you're jet-lagged.
Yeah.
Hello.
So, of course, when we say 10 p.m., we're talking about Pacific Standard Time.
Yes.
Yeah.
I haven't yet booked my flight, but the only ones that I can seem to get will get me there pretty early on the Thursday at about lunchtime, which is a little bit crazy. So I'm sure that I'll be quite heavily jet lagged. So any naps there would be good.
Well, you'll want to rest up because Lewis pulls these all-nighters.
He does.
Once he's down in the lobby. I mean, he was seeing the breakfast crowd roll in one of those nights.
Seeing the Starbucks open at about 5, 6 a.m. or
it's
whatever.
It's the only way I can get a Starbucks drink there because they close at 6 p.m. It's incredible.
Yes.
They close so
weird.
Early. It's ridiculous. It's why you even bother having a Starbucks there if you're going to close so early.
Yeah. Well, I guess they're making a fair bit of cash anyway, so if they can afford to close at 6, then they will.
Well, it's pretty sad. Amy, myself, Ken, I'm not sure if you were with us at the time last time, James, where you all, you know, had to go out on a Starbucks run to get some coffee out. You know,
we did.
We had to go out and find another Starbucks.
Hermosa Beach, wasn't it? We were coming back
exactly.
After we'd had sushi and... we were all wanting a coffee because we wanted to stay up late in the lobby, and we knew that the $4 in the hotel was going to be closed, so we had to
$4
find one somewhere else.
Well, while we're on the topic of Gallifrey 21, let me give a quick rundown of some of the guests that are going to be there.
Guests,
February 26, 27, 28, 2010 at the LAX Marriott. Sarah Sutton, Katie Manning, Tommy Knight, Georgia Moffett, Deborah Watling, Frasier Hines, John Levine, and just added Louise Page, who was the costume designer on the last few seasons of the current series, the David Tennant years, which is a home run for cosplayers because she's going to be, from what I hear, she's going to be one of the judges at the costume contest. And costuming is a big part of Gallifrey.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
This is a great opportunity if you're a costumer or really just want to hear about the current show. This is someone who's using her talents on a daily basis to make Doctor Who. And that's fantastic. Andrew Hayden Smith also just added, who was Jake in Jake series two of... David Tennant's first series two
of
the
show.
Nicholas Briggs, Graham Harper, Gareth Roberts, Phil Ford. The list goes on and on. Colin Teague, Alice Troughton. Go to Gallifrey1.com. Rob Shearman, Paul Carnell, longtime friend of the show. Gary Russell, Tony Lee. I mean, this is just a fantastic
one. Yeah. And us, importantly. We're going to do that.
Almost least importantly. Well, there's actually a whole gallery of podcasters this time around. A couple years ago, it was just us. Then last year, we went from one to three. And this year, we're just going to be a whole bunch
of podcasters. The whole convention of podcasters.
This is really going to be something very exciting.
Whoverville 2, really. Whoverville 2.
Yeah, really.
It felt like it was great. It felt like a podcast meetup last convention I went to.
I was just going
to
say that too, Ken.
So that should be pretty exciting. It's going to be an exciting time in February out in Los Angeles. If you can join us, that would be fantastic. All right, let's jump into some Doctor Who news while we're there.
Yes, yes.
Well, there hasn't been a tremendous amount. There's a recent story out of Digital Spy had linked Cheryl Cole to Doctor Who, who I believe... For those in the U.S. and elsewhere may not know her, but she's a judge from the show The X Factor.
Yes. Well, that's not originally how she was originally in a band called Girls Aloud. Who?
Oh, okay.
They haven't broken up. They were a band who were on a reality television show. I can't remember whether it was Pop Idol or which is the British version of American Idol. Or one of those such shows where they were completely sort of manufactured. And they've been hugely successful here in the UK. And as a result, well, Cheryl is really sort of the head lass, if you like, from the band, the lead vocalist, if you can call it that. And she's married to one of the biggest footballers here in the UK, Ashley Cole. So it's quite. I found it quite interesting that she was, they were allegedly talking to her, or it was rumored that she was going to appear.
This is coming from a report that was in The Mirror, so we should really emphasize the source here, The Mirror. So, and it's an undisclosed insider that said that, if she can find the time, a part will be written for her.
Yeah, I tend to think that it's going to be like what they've done with other celebrities like Richard Dawkins and Derek Acore and things. Mm-hmm. If she does appear, it will be on one of those sort of news star reports. It'll be a cameo, essentially. I don't think that she's actually going to play sort of a major role. Talking about casting rumors, right now there's a big rumor that a Hollywood star is going to join the cast list for David Tennant's last episode. And indeed in the Children in Need special, they're going to be appearing at least on the voiceover. So who knows? I mean, there's all sorts of rumors flying around there. So,
but no name was given? I haven't heard this. Hollywood.
No name, no. It's not going to be in the... I don't know. Well, there's no real sort of news about...
Stephen Baldwin.
Well, I don't know whether it's already going to be, we know about previous rumours, and some of the previous rumours, and indeed, they've almost been semi-confirmed by a lot of spoiler-style photographs and stuff. And one of those names that we already know about technically is a Hollywood star, I guess. So yes. I don't know whether this is just sort of the repeat of a previous rumour and all this kind of stuff.
You're talking about and I think the cat's already out of the bag. We're talking about Timothy Dalton when you said
That was who I was thinking of.
Boy, you should have sounded the spoiler warning on that.
Well, I don't know. I'm very tentative.
Somehow this hate mail heading our way.
Yes.
Yeah, well, I think since Comic-Con, it's been pretty much revealed that he's
going to... Sure. Seeing as how he's on the voice over there, and I wonder if it's going to be a very similar sort of trailer. in that we're going to see at the end of the Waters of Mars?
Well, we're going to be seeing a trailer for it as well in the Children in Need special, which is a fundraiser event that's coming up rather soon, I believe. I think it's next week, if I'm not mistaken.
It is. Yeah. It is. It's very soon. Well, we knew that it would have to be before. Well, it would have to lie
between Waters of Mars and
Waters of Mars and Christmas.
Yeah. We figure
in the first couple of weeks, so
before we'll probably see a trailer at the end of Waters of Mars, and then only maybe a week later, a little less than a week later, we'll see this.
Children in Need.
The rumor is right about it being the opening scene again. Well, and then we'll be full on gung ho. Like we have been with these Waters of Mars previews, where it's going to be one after another. Did you see the preview to the End of Time, the 17th trailer?
Yes. Although, interestingly, speaking about this, there has been a few rumors out there about the title of the penultimate episode. It's pretty much confirmed that the final episode is going to be called The End of Time, but the penultimate episode title still hasn't been sort of revealed. But in an interview recently, Davies said that it will be 6 words long, which is actually the longest title yet, at least in terms of New Who. So
no, actually, the title is going to be called 6 words long. It's only three words.
Well, be.
Well, we did.
He is returning.
This
he is returning.
Previous Podshock, because in the soft cover version, the updated version of A Writer's Tale, I believe they let the cat out of the bag.
That's
the titles of the last two. So,
well, is that confirmed? Because I heard some subspace chatter that that wasn't the case. I don't know.
Make what you will of it.
All right. Well, we do know there's going to be a preview for the Christmas special, whatever it's going to be called, on the Children in Need special. The BBC press office only said preview. What preview means is still open to
big debate
right
there.
Now.
Yeah.
Whether it'll be the first 2 minutes or a couple minutes somewhere in the middle, or maybe it'll be a trailer promo clip thing will be a montage of scenes. Who knows?
Montage.
Well, as I said, we're doing a whole lot of speculating at this point. I mean, we can wait for Patterson Joseph to be the 11th Doctor and Patrick Stewart to play the meddling monk.
Indeed.
Well, have you guys been listening? I haven't had a chance to listen to it, but I know Tara has actually been on the line waiting to be called to be on the show. But David Tennant this week has been on Absolute Radio mornings in the UK. So, everyone's attention's been kind of drawn to that.
Yeah, I must admit, I'm not a morning person, and I haven't tuned in to listen, but I think he's going to be on there
Johnson
for a while.
Was on it as well, just last. Well, I was going to say last night, but it was this morning for you, James.
Indeed. Last night for you, early morning for me.
Yes. And in other Doctor Who kind of related news, I don't know if we had reported. I know I reported on the Sonic News Driver that David Tennant was up for a BAFTA, and it turned out that Robert Kyle had won the Best TV Actor Award over David Tennant.
Oh, Carlisle for Stargate Universe or something?
I don't know what it was for, but I know he won.
Fair enough.
Yes, but did he get voted sexiest man alive?
Yeah, recently. I think you sent me the link, Ken, that David Tennant had been voted the sexiest man by the over 30s.
Yeah, on allaboutyou.com, which, you know, is the mark, the high watermark of all, the pinnacle of all things.
Yes. Smart women click here. Indeed. Sounds a bit rude, really, doesn't it?
But, hey, maybe it was just I'm speaking because I'm jealous.
Yes.
Somehow my nomination slipped through the cracks.
Well, I don't know if there's any other news stories that...
Well,
yes.
there's a bit, and I think Ken's going to preempt it. There's this whole Torchwood 4 thing, perhaps.
Well, I'll let you do that one. I was going to read the other one.
Well,
oh, the other one. Okay, you can read the other one. I'll read the bit about Torchwood 4.
Okay, well, before you go into the Torchwood 4 thing, the series, I'm assuming this has to do with TV Guide and Russell T. Davies' comments about it, where he just said that he's ready to go, which is essentially what he said back in July at Comic-Con, and everyone on the internet is taking this as a confirmation. There hasn't been a BBC confirmation. Now, I'm going to most likely there will be. Torchwood Series 3 was the highest-rated series of Torchwood, so they'll be foolish not to do it, but I just want to temper down everyone on the nets, you know, screaming
that this is a confirmation. I have to disagree with you on this one, because Patterson Joseph is the 11th Doctor.
He is.
It's just like all these headlines confirmed on these blogs and whatever.
Well,
like,
the headline that I saw was RTD planning Torchwood 4.
Yeah, and
I think the difference was that Comic-Con, he said, we'd love to do it, and I have some ideas.
The thing is, and Russell T. has said this before with Doctor Who, is that they have to plan for... They can't wait for the BBC to commission the next series. They have to be ready to go.
Oh, sure. They can plan stories and things, but now...
They're already planning. I'm sure they have stuff in the works. And it's just a matter of just waiting for that green light, and they'll hit the ground running. But it's just part of the course. And I just think everyone goes into, you know, jumps into hysteria saying, oh, it's confirmed.
Well, that may be the blogs, but I mean, it hasn't been confirmed officially. And it you know, until it's been confirmed officially by the Beeb, then there's not much to talk about. But at least now we have a month that Russell T. Davies had said that he's expecting to start things in January. So that may mean that they're expecting to film in January, or, you know, pre-production is going to commence in January, or what? Who knows? But, they're going to do it.
He says in that same sentence that, you know, he's hoping that that's the case. I'm not looking at it right now, so I can't quote it, but he says, hopefully, or if we're lucky, or whatever. So he has, you know, he himself is saying that it's not a done thing yet.
Yeah, he's saying it's not a done deal, but, I mean, the actual quote that he gave was, the recession has hit British television, but fingers crossed, it will be a go. We expect things to start to move in January. We've got great ideas for the show. I think there's a further lease on life for many years to come, but certainly for a fourth season. So, I mean, this is one of the BBC's most popular shows, particularly abroad, you know, even more so perhaps than Doctor Who, certainly in America. So they'd be daft not to create a new series. And just look, series 3 of Torchwood has been the most popular series of Torchwood ever. And, you know, I've had my gripes about Torchwood in the past, but Series 3 was brilliant. It had its... We'd done our review. It had its holes, but it was pretty much there. It was pretty much perfect, I thought. And I think that they would be daft not to commission a Torchwood 4, even if we have to wait another year for it or so, because Lord knows we waited quite a long time between Series 2 and Series 3.
Mm-hmm.
So... We shall see. Yeah. We shall see.
I think that's the key word, is that we shall see. And
yeah, but I completely agree with you, mate, by saying, you know, there's so many people out there who are taking this as, oh, it's confirmed, it's happening, you know. No, but at least we know that things are moving, you know. Stuff is going on. Plans are being made.
Yeah, if anyone had any doubts, you know, with maybe perhaps the case that Russell T. Davies is in the U.S. now, you know, hopefully those doubts are now erased.
Fingers crossed.
Mm-hmm. So, Ken, you had something that you wanted to talk about?
I thought James was going to mention that, because I also sent him the link from the John Sim Society about his interview where he discusses playing the Master again in the final two David Tennant stories and the end of time. And he says, and this is the way the headline reads, so make what you will of this, He says, craziest Doctor Who villain ever says his final showdown with David Tennant will be will scare us all witless.
Mm.
So
make of that what you will.
This particular one will also be a bit on the dark side. And the Master is crazier than ever. I never took the Master as being crazy. I took John Sims' Master as being crazy.
Well, I think that's probably what he's getting at.
Yeah. I took Roger Delgado's Master as not really being crazy, but
sinister, but not
sinister, crazy. Calculating.
Yeah.
And I think
a lot of people had complaints about John Sims' portrayal of the Master. I mean, I don't think
really.
Yeah, because he
seriously?
Was. Because he was playing it more on the crazy side. And I think some people didn't really care for that. They rather have a more, you know, more serious Master.
Right.
The Mail Online is actually where the story originates, but I read it on one of the blogs for John Sim. But so that's good. I mean, there's more to the interview than that. You can find it on that particular blog. Like I said, maybe Lewis can throw it in the Enhanced podcast. But it's the cat's out of the bag there too. Lewis mentioned Timothy Dalton a few minutes ago, and the same thing with John Sim. Everybody's like, oh, you know, I don't want to know anything about the last one. Well, how can you help it? I mean, you just quite honestly, you'd have to go to a hermitage on Titan 3 and stay away from the internet, the news, the radio, just about
everything.
Anything.
Yeah. Well, again, going back to July with Comic-Con in San Diego, it confirmed that John Sim was going to be there. And then the BBC website, the Doctor Who official Doctor Who website, then posted something that John Sim, you know, confirming that John Sim was returning.
Yeah.
So it's pretty much officially out there. And you can't avoid certain things, such as casting or whatever, you know, as much as they try, these things get out there.
Yeah.
Quite.
And especially now with such a long gap between episodes, people just have this thirst that for knowledge and information, that people are scouring the net for it. Not only that, but the streets as well, taking photos of location shooting with Matt Smith now, and people are speculating what that all means and what villains are returning, and there's all different theories about what's going on there as well.
I think, as far as I know, that pretty much wraps it up for news, aside from that maybe Sarah Jane is doing very, very well at the moment.
Yeah, I haven't caught this week's double, you know, episodes yet, but
yeah, I caught the first one. I've yet to see the second part of it, but it had about 1 million viewers at the time when it was first broadcast, which is terrific to say that usually around that time slot, it's only about 0.4 million, 400,000.
The David Tennant appearance brought in a lot of viewers. I know the first episode, The Wedding of Sarah Jane Smith, brought in 1.3 million viewers, and then I think the second was 1.1, somewhere around there.
Sure. So I have to wonder whether, you know, that's sort of drawn more people into it, and maybe whether they should have done it in the first series to sort of get it more of a following. But
yeah, I think initially they were trying to avoid any crossovers, and then now that David Tennant's leaving, I guess this is the last chance for him to be on it. And
yes,
it's interesting because this was actually David Tennant's last time playing the Doctor.
Yeah,
you know, up
seriously.
To this point. Because he had already shot the others' specials, so obviously probably he already recorded the audio for Dreamland, so this was actually his last portrayal as the Doctor for this Sarah Jane adventure.
Yes.
I'm assuming you both seen it already?
Yeah.
Okay. So what was your take on it?
I enjoyed it. I thought it was very well done. You know, keeping in mind that it's a Sarah Jane adventure, so it's a little bit different than reviewing something like a Doctor Who story. But I thought that the episode, you know, was moving at a nice pace, and David Tennant's appearance was excellent, and the story was good. I mean, it was just a Sarah Jane adventure. The baddie isn't. The story isn't complex as to what the bad guy is going to do in a Sarah Jane adventure. He comes in, he's
to
be bad, he needs to move on.
And they've taken flack for that on several occasions, because it's every single episode it's very similar, if not the same, in a way. Yeah. But, you know, you've only got a short period of time to cast a new villain, and it's targeted to a much younger audience who you can't necessarily hold their attention as well as you can with Doctor Who. So, but I'd go so far as to say that it's the best Sarah Jane I'd seen, mm-hmm. just purely because the Doctor was in it, really.
Yeah.
And it added... he was, as David Tennant always is, he was brilliant, and it was nice that they kept the canon there and made references to all of the previous appearances of when they have had a crossover with Sarah Jane and the Doctor on Doctor Who, which was quite fun. Thoroughly enjoyed it.
I had some problems with it. I was originally a little bit disappointed with it. Watching it the second time, I liked it a little bit better, maybe because my expectations weren't as high, you know, and maybe it was because of this long gap between, you know, seeing the Doctor in the Dead Planet back in April that maybe I had higher expectations for seeing this. I just thought it's, granted it is a children's show and that I, you know, I'm well aware of, but it just was hard to believe some of this. I think you got to treat, even with children, you got to treat them intelligently.
Oh, wait until you see the current episode then.
Oh no, I'm afraid.
In terms of believability.
Well, you know, I think they could have done a lot better with this story if the Peter Dalton character, which is the love interest that to Sarah Jane, was introduced in this story. And of course, they tried to compress time by saying, OK, well, now 2 days later or 3 weeks later, and try to develop the relationship that way in just two episodes. But I feel, you know, this probably would have worked better if it was placed later in the series and had. And introduced the character him early on, and they could have even had some fun with it by trying to avoid what they were doing, you know, their escapades and their adventures, and try to, you know, keep it away from the Peter Dalton character, you know, and then it's revealed later on towards the end of the series who he is and what he's involved with. But and this whole trickster thing, I don't understand or really believe that. I mean, if he was trying to infiltrate Earth, I can't believe that Sarah Jane Smith is that. A force of they need to overcome her. I mean, if he's that powerful, how just eliminate her and the kids and just I don't know. It was just hard to swallow, but it was good to see K-9 back in full force. It's just when it caters to children. I mean, growing up, I have always liked intelligent shows, even if they were meant for children, without any, you know, goofy aliens and
Daggetts.
Yeah. And also, you know, Leslie they stuck Crusher. In that slice of time. Maybe I thought it would work better if they had the other characters, you know, frozen in that room. If they're stuck in a second of time, then maybe having the other cast of characters still in the wedding hall, just standing still, would make it a little bit more believable. They're all gone, and the house is somewhere in the void, and I don't know, they're in another dimension. It just was hard to kind of swallow it all.
Take it easy, kid. It's only a movie.
Exactly. So watching it a second time, I was able to enjoy it a little bit better without having to worry about, you know, trying to swallow it all. I just took it for what it was.
I think that's kind of what you have to do with Sarah Jane, really. But there we are.
As you say, there we are. All right, so I guess we'll come back and we'll have some interviews from Hurricane Who, and we'll go from there. So we'll be right back after these messages.
Hello, my name's Toby Haydock, and you're listening to Doctor Who Podshock.
What's that? It's a sonic screwdriver. Never fails.
Drop the sonic device.
Isn't my day, is it?
Even a sonic screwdriver won't get me out of this one.
Are you seeking Doctor Who news? The Sonic News Driver. Selected Doctor Who-related news stories delivered sonically. All in a bite-sized podcast. No bigger than a jelly baby.
Piston function of the sonic blaster, a sonic cannon, and a triple and folded sonic disruptor. Doc, what you got?
I've got a sonic... Oh, never mind.
What?
It's sonic. Okay, let's leave it at that.
Disruptor, cannon, what?
It's sonic. Totally sonic.
sonic what? Screwdriver!
The Sonic News Driver. Find it on iTunes or go to sonicnewsdriver.com.
Who has a sonic screwdriver?
I do!
The Sonic News Driver. Get yours today, sonically.
Neat, isn't it?
Hey, this is just a quick note to thank all those that have already become Podshock supporting subscribers. When you become a supporting subscriber, you will gain access to special extra shows. We just had one just recently, and we have another one coming to you very soon. For only $5 a month, that's not much more than the cost of a large coffee out of a specialty shop, or just a fraction of the price of a typical movie ticket. Not only will you be supporting our regular show, but you'll gain access to extra content with your support. No huge investment up front, only for a simple small monthly supporting subscriber fee each month, which you can cancel at any time, will make you feel better knowing you are supporting a show you love and help ensure it to continue and grow. So go to our website, thegallifreyanembassy.org or podshock.net and subscribe today. It is because of your support that makes this episode and others possible. We are back with Doctor Who Podshock. Ken and James are still with me, thankfully. Always a good sign. We have some coverage of Hurricane Who, which took place Halloween weekend, this past Halloween. And we had two correspondents there, Ian Bissett and Tara Wheeler, who thankfully were there and covering the event for us. And to that end, they were able to obtain some interviews with some of the people there among the guests. And one of them is a guest that we had on our live show, our live on-stage show at Gallifrey this past year, Toby Haddock, who's best known for his comedy piece or stage show, The Moths Ate My Scarf, I believe it's called. So we interviewed him there, but it's been, that was about, what, 9 months ago or somewhere along those, today's the, yeah, somewhere like that. So there's been some further developments with Toby since that time. So this is Ian Bissett and Toby.
This is Ian Bissett from Doctor Who Podshock, and I'm sitting down with Mr. Toby Haddock. I did pronounce that right, right?
You did indeed, yes, bless you.
Yes, I've been practicing it all weekend. Oh, like, I don't want to say it wrong. Now, last time Podshock caught up with you was at Gallifrey.
Yeah.
And I had to listen to that again because I'm like, I don't want to ask him the same questions. What have you been up to since Gally?
Oh, I've been very lucky. Gallifrey was my first trip abroad and my first international convention, which I loved. I mean, it's a brilliant convention. And then I took the show on a non-Doctor Who, it was a comedy festival tour in New Zealand, where I was. I did Auckland and Wellington and had a wonderful time. And then I went to Canada for 5 days. And saw the Niagara Falls and did the show at a lovely convention in Canada. And I've been touring the show in the UK still, supposedly finishing it off. And this was going to be my last one here at Hurricane Who, which Jared was very excited about. And he got slightly less excited when I said, the UK tour has just been extended. So I'm done for the year now, but I will be on the road again from February, I think, covering anywhere that I haven't been before, and I think a couple of places I have been before where it sold out. So I'm still doing my Doctor Who scarf whilst working on a new show as well. Yeah, but that's in very early stages, but I do have to do my difficult second album.
Ha! Yes. Just a backtrack, you were in my home country, New Zealand.
Yeah.
And last night during the show, you shocked me when you said Shortland Street. I was like, oh, New Zealand reference. I was happy.
Yes, I don't know why. I didn't mean to throw that in. I threw that in because I'd done so long in New Zealand. I did a run of a week in Auckland, a week in Wellington. And I worked out, you know, various references that would work for New Zealand. And I timed the Shortland Street bit quite well. And for some reason, my brain made it come out of my mouth here in Florida, which probably baffled everyone apart from you.
Well, maybe you picked up the accent or something. I don't know. It's like,
but yeah, that joke was just for you.
Just for me. I was like, oh, I wonder if he said that because I was here. Hang on, he doesn't know where I'm from. Ah, well. I wanted to ask you, it has to have been quite a journey for you to, I mean, listening to your show last night, and for all of you that haven't seen the show, you can get it on CD. Is it somewhat bittersweet what you went through in childhood, and now it's turned into something quite almost therapeutic?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I sort of wrote what I knew, which is I tried to tell the story and put jokes in there, and I hadn't intended it to be quite as personal as it was, but comedy always comes from other people's misfortune, and my comic persona as a stand-up anyway is always quite, oh god, my life's rubbish, isn't that funny. I have quite a sort of bittersweet, cynical sense of humour that's quite self-indulgent. I was quite an unhappy kid, I think, and Doctor Who was the thing that was always there for me. So it was, when I was telling the story and saying why Doctor Who is so good, that was a natural approach, was to, highlight the things I didn't enjoy as a kid and juxtapose it with the joy that I got from Doctor Who. And so many things have happened. For example, when Colin Baker recorded a cameo for the radio version, and the producer let me come in the box and watch him read lines I'd written for him, I wanted to get on the phone to my 10-year-old self and just go, that's going to happen. And I think he would have perked up a little bit.
Right. And also being able to, being invited to do commentaries on episodes you watched and be basically brought in just that little bit higher than the rest of us regular fans.
Well, the idea of doing a DVD commentary is something that I think appeals to a lot of us. It's fun, and some podcasts do it. Right. You watch the episode, and it's fun to do. But to actually be asked to do it and to sit essentially with my heroes and elicit their memories and actually be part of something tangible, have your name there on the DVD is astonishingly flattering and great fun. I get a real frisson of enjoyment, and I'm doing one next week. You get sent the DVD lineup, and you go, "Oh, I've never met them before, and oh, they're going to be great." And boom, boom, boom. So and I've had the honour of working with some legends from the early years of the show, and I'm very flattered and. I hope they are. I've done a few. I've got a fair few in the can, so hopefully I'm not making a fool of myself on them.
But not Dorothy Rose Gribble yet.
No, Dorothy Rose Gribble. No, we didn't manage to get hold of her. That's a shame.
You said that the tour from Oz has been extended. You do realize, though, that if you get invited back to conventions, that there'll be an expectation that they're going to get to see Oz. Are you ready to kind of put it away after the tour, or is it going to be something that you think is always going to be sitting there going, hi?
Well, I was talking to my agent and the West End producer who organises who bought the tour, basically. And we had a sit down a couple of weeks ago, and they said, look, this is something that you can do off and on for quite a long time if you want to. Are you interested? And if people want to see it, I'm happy to do it. I'm not one of those people who gets prissy and goes, oh, I'm beyond that now, I don't want to do it. I haven't got bored of doing the show. I've done it for 3 years. Last night was as much fun as I've had doing it. And if people still want to see it, I will still do it.
How different is it doing Moths for a Doctor Who audience as opposed to a regular audience? I mean, I'm sure you still get people who come up in a regular audience and go, oh yeah, I remember those episodes and it was fabulous, but it must be a different kind of reaction.
It is a different thing. I mean, I have to say that it was most flattering early on when I was doing the show in Edinburgh, because I didn't want it to be seen as a Doctor Who show, not because I'm not proud and don't love Doctor Who, but I'm a professional stand-up comedian. I wanted it to be a good show in its own right. I didn't write a show for conventions. That wasn't what I had in mind. Being a celebrity Doctor Who fan is not something I consider myself or want to be. I'm a Doctor Who fan who happens to earn a living as a comedian and therefore happens to talk about Doctor. I don't care how high I am on the fan ladder. As I say, I don't consider myself to be so. I'm, you know, one of the joys of doing the conventions is that you hang around with like-minded people and talk about the merits or otherwise of the androids of Tara. That's what we like doing. The fact that I, you know, get brought over and have to sing for my supper by doing the show is absolutely fine. So the joy of Edinburgh was actually people coming up to me and saying, I've never seen Doctor Who, and I really like that show. That was when I thought, right, okay, I've got a good show here. That's important. But now that I know that, coming to do it, and you know, it was like I was talking to friends last night, and some things that people would laugh at and think, you know, gosh, surely he doesn't do that, like, you know, knowing actors' names and things like that. We all know we all do it. So so instead of being a sort of confessional, aren't I a bit strange, it's actually, when you're doing it to, you know, an audience of lay people, as it were, doing it in front of fans, it's sort of going, come on, let's just be honest, this is the sort of thing we do. We keep our DVDs in chronological order and get very annoyed the fact that Patrick Troughton isn't sepia-tinted on the Seeds of Death spying or whatever, you know. So it's much more of a shared, I feel I share it with the audience more at a convention. And you time the jokes differently because there were so many rounds of applause after I'd said various any old bits that, you know, you then have to time it slightly differently, but it actually means the audience time it for you, and it makes it a hell of a lot easier to perform because they set the tempo. So it was just a joy last night. It was great.
Aside from Moths, and of course other things in fandom and like the DVDs, what is next for you?
As soon as I get back, I'm doing some voices for the Harry Potter Xbox game, including playing Barty Crouch Jr., who, to my delight, is the character that David Tennant plays. I've done an episode of Coronation Street that goes out shortly, but fortunately a lot of the part got cut down before I got there and nobody told me, but it's work, it's fine. And other than that, you know, I'm very busy with comedy. I've got enough work to keep me going till well beyond Christmas, and then it'll be really gearing up for Edinburgh next year and a new show, hopefully.
Excellent.
Yeah. Oh, and I'm writing a book as well, but watch this space for that.
Watch this space. And the last question is a personal one from Tara Wheeler, artist Tara. She wants to know what pattern you used to knit your original scarf.
I actually didn't use a pattern. Hello, Tara. I didn't actually use a pattern. My grandmother ran a little wool shop in the south of England, and when she retired and they sold up, we had literally gallon. You can't have a gallon of wool, but we had an absolute cascading mountains of wool. And my mum, it was my mum, she said, well, why don't you knit a Doctor Who scarf? Now, I could do the nitty bits, but she did the casting off and carrying on, and I think I gave up and she finished it off for me. We know the sort of pastely sort of colours and the right colours to use, and we just used what was there that kind of fitted and looked right. So, no, an absolute purist would have said it wasn't a proper Doctor Who scarf, but it did when it was 13 foot long, and it was very wide. I mean, it looked the real deal, and it was a sad moment when it left us.
Mm. Well, thank you so much for your time, Toby.
I
very much enjoyed the show. And look forward to seeing you again, hopefully soon.
Yes, well, thank you very much. Doctor Who fans are great people. Everyone's been very nice. And I hope to see everyone again very soon.
Thank you very much.
Toby, once again, we had him live on stage back in February at Gallifrey. And here he was again in Orlando, Florida. It's good to hear him get an update on where he's at.
Splendid chap.
All of them.
Indeed. All of him.
So also while Ian and Tara were there, they had the privilege of seeing other guests as well and interviewing them. Here is Colin Sparrow, or Spall. Forgive me if I'm mispronouncing his last name. He was in Attack of the Cybermen. Not Attack. Rise of the Cybermen and Age of Steel, right? He played
the sidekick to Mickey, if you will.
Yeah,
the henchman.
Henchman. That was. And so, without
he was John. He was Lumix's henchman,
second hand man, or number one.
That's just fabulously creepy. And just, I just love
when
the way
you
just
ask
like,
for that, the lion sleeps tonight. That, I mean, absolutely, hairs on the back of my neck stood straight up. That was just so creepy.
It's weird, isn't it? This sort of guy that's sort of taken all these homeless people and turned them into God knows what, and then decides,
put that on.
The way you played it and made it just like, today's Wednesday, we're going to play that and not hear it screaming.
Yeah.
So you made a wonderful villain. You made it really a delightfully creepy
villain.
But a villain
with a heart. In the end, he's like, not having me.
That's it.
Yeah.
Come off. We could only do that once. With the props boys were saying, don't touch it.
Get it right.
Do it in this order.
Right.
So I don't think I did it in the right order. Anyway. I think I popped it up when we actually shot it. I think I pulled this one instead of that one. I don't know.
It looked fantastic, let me tell you, okay? Because that is a fantastic episode. And you make a great
enjoyable.
And we loved when your character decided, this is the time to jump ship. And we were all with you. Everybody at home was like,
time
that's
to go. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it was great to do that.
Yeah, it's fabulous. So I said to my son, I'm like, we've got to watch this. Why, Dad? Because he's going to be there. Really?
Great.
Well, this is Ian. I'm Tara. We're with Podshock and also with the Colton
Collective Podcast.
Oh,
to do with a man in Manchester.
I'm going to Manchester as soon as I get back, funnily enough.
We have
another convention. Something cafe?
Oh, who in the Fab Cafe?
Fab Cafe. That's
if a gentleman called Dave Cooper, Dave AC, comes up and says hi. He's the other half of the Colton Collective Podcast, and we drink wine on Sundays online with each other.
Wonderful. Yeah, if I see him, I should certainly have a chat once I've met you.
Yes, and I'll tell him, I'm like, say hello to Colin when you're there.
Yeah, great. Oh, that's good. Yeah.
Thank you very much.
There we go.
Really
Thank
appreciate
you.
It. Thank you so much.
The name's Colin, not sir.
It's been absolutely delightful meeting you. And
thank you
so much for coming. And we hope you really enjoy the States. And you were saying your first trip to the States?
I've never been to the States. Really?
Never
been to the States. Yeah.
Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you.
You have to come again.
Yeah. And I hope every time you come to the States, you're met by crowds of people overjoyed to see you and buy you drinks.
That's lovely.
Yeah. Yeah, I love the lizards running back and forth across the back.
Love it.
She does that too. But I'm down here, all the way down here, and it's like, lizard.
Well, see, I'm big into the lizards and frogs and things, but I live in Albuquerque, and so there's a specific time of the year when we have lizards and snakes. And then right now, there's 2 foot of snow on the ground. So
strange is that.
Yeah. I like it.
That's good.
Because then you can go skiing. And then,
you can.
And then in the summer, you go biking and hiking and everything's wonderful. And
sounds lovely.
Yeah.
I'd like to see more of the South Summer at some point.
Anytime you want to come west, come on out. I'll take you out, show you the Grand Canyon.
You can take a trip in our tartan.
I wish that thing worked. God, I wish that thing worked. But anytime you want to come out to California, come do Gallifrey 1 with us. We'd love to have you.
It'd be lovely to do Gallifrey, but obviously one has to be waiting to be invited.
Oh, yeah.
Well, you see, the thing is if you say, invite me to Gallifrey 1, into that, maybe you will.
That's right, and maybe the cruise.
Yes.
That would be nice.
Yeah, that beats working, being on a cruise to get paid to be there.
Someone's got to do it.
It's a dirty job, but you think you can handle it.
Don't really want to be there.
We're sorry to have just shanghaied you that. No, so happy to have met you. It's lovely.
I'm pleasure to meet you. Thank you very much.
All right, well, that was Tara Wheeler and Ian Bissett for Doctor Who Podshock, speaking with Colin Sparrow, who was in Rise of the Cybermen and the following episode, The Age of Steel, which one by one, I guess we're getting each one of those actors from those two episodes on our show. We had Jules Burt, now Colin, and maybe in February we'll have Andrew Hayden Smith. All righty, well, let's continue with our coverage of Hurricane Who, and this is last but not least, Robert Sherman, I should say, best known probably for new Doctor Who fans for his writing of the episode Dalek, which is a Christopher Eccleston story, which reintroduced the Daleks in the series. We had interviewed him a couple years ago, a couple Gallifreys ago, and so we're delighted to have him back on our show once again, Robert Sherman.
the face come off when I had, you know, reduced to a skull. They used it in Doomsday. But I wrote that into Dark and they said, it's just too much. But by Doomsday, Series 2, they could do things which are a bit nastier. So I'm now sorry, I didn't say. There we are, Tom.
There was, I think that was the episode that got my son hooked. Now. And so, I mean, like, you always, like, I was writing on it. It was like, it's like, okay, so I'm sitting and watching this. These are the Daleks. These are the biggest bed. And then the sucker, it's like,
I got a lot to give up to, actually, because you just feel that the Daleks have been on British TV before. Like, you know, chocolate biscuit hats, and they'd be doing Kit Kats and things, and they just thought they were a joke. And I just said, if we do anything, I want them to take them seriously again. And so for me, it was 45 minutes of trying to say, okay, we're going to have it become a nice dark at the end, arguably, and become a little bit emotional, but I want people to think it's a scary thing. The scene which I really enjoyed writing is the bit where it electrocutes them all. I wanted to just be so dismissive to say, I can do it in.
And it's nothing.
One Dalek against, and they're all like, let's get back in the room.
But I was simply ripping off the 60s story. You know, I particularly love Power of the Daleks and Evil, and I was just ripping off where they'd done it before. Because back when the Daleks began, they were tremendously impressive, but they've become watered down over the years. Partly because of Davros, I think. Mm. Also just because people just get over familiar with things.
Well, I had so many friends who said, you know, the Daleks are rubbish. Exactly like that. Yeah. I said, oh my God, they're not scary. What's scary about them? And when I show them that scene where the turret rotates, they suddenly go, okay, that, because there's so many early episodes where the Doctor gets behind the damn Dalek and pushes it.
Yeah, actually, it's actually part of the trouble is people have said to me subsequently, they say things like the rotating section with the upstairs thing. They say, well, the Daleks couldn't do that before. And you say, well, arguably, we've seen Planet of the Daleks and pushing it into an ice stream.
Right.
Why is it just rotating?
Yeah.
Because of the temperature on the planet's biodome. I mean, there's always an answer. But yeah, it's that awful thing where you think we want to try and make sure that people don't mock them. You want to make it so that what you're giving them new powers. I mean, I wrote into one bit and I cut it out. Thank God, actually, because I think it's a bit too much. Where those balls, I used the balls.
Yes. And they come off. Yes.
Yeah, and we used a bit of the idea, but the idea was that they unscrewed and they became like sentient minds.
Oh crap!
That would fly after people who made noises. And I used that in several drafts, but it got just too expensive.
Yeah.
And then later on, when we had to, because we used to have the Dalek explode.
Right.
But we couldn't then do that because Chris Eccleston couldn't be available for certain pickup shots. So it's a special effect. They said, we'll have the balls come off and isolate it and then they'll blow up inside.
Right.
But it's not as clear. People still think that Dalek is teleporting.
I have
and it
heard.
It bloody isn't. It's dying.
It's
the story doesn't make any sense of it. If it teleports, it doesn't make any sense to it.
Right.
It's not the Dalek from. Daleks of Manhattan.
Right, no.
Which is, people said, could it be?
No.
No.
That's like self-destructing,
But
I have heard that.
Again, I think the ball thing's too far, because actually with the ball thing, you just think, we've never seen that before, though. I mean, really, that really is a stretch. Even from as a fan for myself, I just thought, is that not really just, that's not that credible? They've done it before, we'd have seen it before. Whereas I think the midsection, you can buy the fact that we're just seeing it. But, you know, because I think when we watched Doctor Who, I don't know about you, but I was still that we're watching it through the eyes of being a television show. And we're watching, you know, if you see a bad special effect or a bad set, you just think, but I can imagine that it's meant to be this.
Right.
And I think with the diamond section rotating, you think, I'd like to imagine that we could have seen this, it's just that we didn't because they couldn't do it. Rather than it's a whole new idea. So we're just trying to sort of do them in that way. But
I just think you made the Daleks a hell of a lot scarier than they were. I'm glad that you updated them for a new generation because, I mean...
Well, they've been back so often since, which is actually rather lovely.
Yeah.
So it became important to get them right because, and I didn't know they were going to be doing that. I mean, all I knew was that they had Dalek and I knew they were going to bring them into the end of the season with Bad Wolf, Parting of the Ways. We didn't know there'd be a second series. I mean, I just thought that could be the end of it.
Yeah.
And it felt like an important thing that we got them right. Just so that actually, if they could carry on later, they would. And of course, they've been back every year. And it feels actually, I feel very proud that.
Well, I'm glad to find out that you're the one who wrote in that rotating bit and the levitate bit.
it and all of that, because
there are other examples. I mean, I'll probably mention it on stage at some other point, but for example, the melting of the boards.
Yes.
Now that isn't me. Okay. That's special effects of being unable to do what I'd written.
What did you
write? Well, I'd written that the dikes, the bullets just bounce off.
Yeah.
And every time they bounce off, they get a little spark. Too expensive. They said, how about we just have them melt as they come towards?
And you went, okay.
Look, but they did it.
Yeah.
And they said, look, there's no change of dialogue. It's just, rather than the sparks hitting, they just said, we can do that. And everyone said, yeah, right. So suddenly we've got a new, you know, the
dikes. A new set, yes.
Now it's going because it was cheaper.
Right.
And it's better.
Yeah, it is.
It's better than what I'd written. But that's because.
Well, I like how that goes in with the electrocution scene later on, because.
Yeah, that makes some sense.
Exactly.
I like the electrocution scene. I'm very proud of that scene.
You should be. You should be. It's an excellent scene. It's terrifying.
The thing I really love
is it's just so dismissive of you.
Right. It's like, you're not even worth my trouble.
Yeah, that's right.
I have places to be, people to see. Sorry. Bye.
Yeah.
So.
What I really like about it is it shows the menace of one single Dalek. And every time they've come back since,
well, that's
it's
the problem.
Multiplied. And
I think that Hinchcliffe got right, actually, like when he was doing the show. Robert Holmes got right. But they very quickly eased out big monster stories because they said one single villain actually more.
Right.
You have 100,000 dogs. But one dog, it could be a real epic thing.
And it was. It was.
It's like Sim Check is most fairly good. Yes,
thank you. Thank you so much. It's lovely to meet you, finally.
Thank you.
See you on the net.
And we do apologize for all that background noise there. They were at a convention, so there were other activities obviously going on in the background there. But we were delighted just to have Robert back on our show. He's a delight to see at a convention. And if you do have the opportunity to be at a convention with him, be sure to say hello. He's a warm, charming person and be more than happy to speak with you. And we're thankful that he had taken on the task of bringing back the Daleks back to Doctor Who and showing them for what they are and making them the force that they are today. So, are you guys up to feedback?
Sure. Feed my back.
Let's see what we have in feedback then. Since we've been a little backlogged with feedback here, but we're getting to them slowly but surely. So this is the feedback section of our show. Once again, you can always send us feedback at feedback@podshock.net, and you can preferably leave us audio feedback by calling the Podshock public call box. That's 206-600-6517, and that's a 206 area code in the U.S., so be aware of that. So, but you can use your cell phone or mobile phone and give a call, and you can also use that same device if you have a smartphone like an Apple iPhone or a BlackBerry or a similar device that will allow you to do memo recording on the device itself and then email it. You can just simply do your recording on your iPhone or BlackBerry and then send it along to feedback@podshock.net, and we'll get your audio that way. So it makes it very uncomplicated, and you can make it very easy to send us your audio feedback. But to that end, this is going back to this past summer with our feedback here. So without any further ado, let's address some of this feedback.
Hello, gentlemen. It's Andre on Long Island. I figured I'd call and say hi. And, you know, I'm listening to 160 right now and thought after hearing the travails of Cablevision here on Long Island, I'd let you in on a little story that I find humorous. And by the way, you know, Ken, Lou, if you really need a place to watch Doctor Who and Fios isn't in your area yet, I've got a nice 62-inch television here in Mineola that you're welcome to come and watch this show on. All right. So, you know, I'm doing my normal routine around the house. One day, I get a knock on the door. I'm just walking by, I open it up, it's a Cablevision guy. Not begging, but, you know, talking to me, trying to convince me the error of my ways of leaving Cablevision and coming back to the fold. And I stand there and I listen to him spat on and on about Cablevision and what they can do for me. And then he goes, "Why did you leave us?" I said, "Simple. One station. You don't carry the BBC America." And with that, I swear to God, his face just dropped. Like, completely out of nowhere, this just blindsided him. I swear to God, I could have taken a baseball bat and whacked him upside the head, and he wouldn't have noticed. That's how crestfallen the man was. He stood there trying to explain to me that they had BBC Worldwide. And I stood there patiently taking his, you know, little pamphlet and, you know, looking at it and saying, do you have the BBC America? No? No. Come back when you do. And just leaving him standing there on the doorstep, just baffled and, you know, bewildered and just, when will they learn? You know? Anyway, thought you guys might find that amusing. Talk to you later. Nice seeing you again at the DWNY meet in the city. Although, yes, I did not call in on the way home this time. As you can tell, stone cold sober-ish. And enunciating my words properly. Good night, gentlemen.
Well, thank you, Andre. He's a,
that is he's awesome. A, that is
he's
really, really cool.
He's usually at the Doctor Who NY meetups, and he was just there this past week with the Louise Jameson event.
That was a great event, by the way. Really well put together. A lot of fun.
Yeah, yeah. For the Who York is Nigel Affairs and Louise Jameson were both there,
mm-hmm.
and it was a nice evening.
Nice place. The staff was great. The place was closed to the public, so it was like, you know, a private event at a restaurant and a bar. The prices were very reasonable for Manhattan. I was really expecting to get walloped, and the prices were very reasonable. And the event was just well put together. So thumbs up to Barnaby and company, Barnaby and John at Who York Events. WhoYork.com is their website, and I believe they are planning at least two or three for 2010. So that will be exciting. The next one will be in the springtime.
All right. Well, and then they have their the convention they're planning in May.
Well, that's not them. That's the folks from Chicago TARDIS are doing TARDIS.
I thought they were doing something as well, though. I thought Who York was going to be an event taking place in May.
No.
Well, what do I know? They don't invite me to the meetings anymore. All right. Well, let's go to our next piece of feedback here.
Hello again, Podshock. It's Ren. Continuing with the Big Finish audio reviews from last time, we're moving on to the top five for Doctor number 6. I have to say, like many fans of Classic Who, that the 6th Doctor didn't really give me a very good impression the first time round in the TV series. He was brash, a bit rude, and at times felt somewhat heartless, not to mention a bit traumatizing in his very first scene with Perry, all without much of a chance to redeem himself. As such, the 6th Doctor is oftentimes looked at as the black sheep of the Doctor family. You know, the one you don't really invite to the family gatherings, but who shows up nonetheless, and in a very bad suit. However, after listening to the Big Finish audios with Colin Baker reviving his role as the 6th Doctor, I can honestly say that I believe this impression with the character is wrong, or at least misleading. Given the chance, the basis for an absolutely brilliant version of the Doctor is there in those very first glimpses, but with the chances to expound upon it and give him more depth was never allowed in the TV series. In the Big Finish audios, this chance is extended, and Colin Baker and the writers run with it, with fantastic results. It's entirely due to the Big Finish audios that, when asked which Doctor I would ultimately consider as my Doctor, I happily claim the 6th. I should make mention that I have not had a chance to listen to any 6th Doctor audios featuring Charlie as his companion, and so none of them are featured here. But with that noted, and this small introduction, let's move on to the reviews. First and foremost is one of the earliest Big Finish audios, Whispers of Terror, written by Justin Richards and featuring the 6th Doctor and Perry. Despite being from the fledgling years of Big Finish, Whispers of Terror stands the test of time and ranks number one in my all-time favorite audio stories ever. When the Doctor and Perry materialize in the Museum of Oral Antiquities, they find themselves tangled up in a web of deceit, terror, and murder. The audio is aptly named, as Whispers of Terror will keep you on the edge of your seat the entire way through, and if you listen to it the first time around the way I did, in the dark, alone, you might need to keep a few lights on when it's done. If I was going to recommend a first audio for new listeners to the genre, this would be the audio to buy. On a side note, the post-production was done by Jason High Ellery, who also did post-production on Red Dawn, which was featured in my last review, and on a Seventh Doctor story that will be featured in my next review. Jason will be attending Gallifrey 1 next year, so if you can go, give this a listen to hear some of his excellent post-production work. Number two is a story that many listeners will be familiar with, at least in a small way. Jubilee might be best known to New Who fans as the basis for the Ninth Doctor's TV story, Dalek. However, while both have their shared points, Dalek is not just a visual translation of the original audio story, and Jubilee deserves the full attention of any classic Who fan that can appreciate insight into the hearts and minds of humans and Daleks alike. Jubilee is a horror story, one that captures an unexpected portrait of the dark side of humanity in a way that will leave you shuddering with fear that you might find yourself looking in a mirror and seeing that part in your own reflection. But it's also a story about compassion, human compassion, and the Doctor's own compassion, even for his most hated enemy. Jubilee will move you, possibly more than any Big Finish audio ever might, and it's a story that requires a good bit of emotional investment, so give it a listen when you can devote your full attention to it. Next on the list is Ish. Another Dr. Perry story. Ish is written by Phil Pascoe and is set in the Articulated Worlds. Ish is, when it comes down to it, a story for linguophiles. The plot itself isn't terrible, and there are many things to keep you involved, but the best part is the way an entire world of words comes tangent and palpable to the listener. It's ear candy at its finest, and for that alone, it's worth the listen. Number four is Doctor Who and the Pirates, written by Jacqueline Rayner and featuring Maggie Stables as the Doctor's companion, Evelyn Smythe. I feel like it would be enough to mention that this particular audio story features both pirates and fantastic musical numbers like I Am the Very Model of a Gallifreyan Buccaneer, sung rather wonderfully by the Doctor himself. However, it should probably be made note of that it does in fact feature a lovely underthread of a plot that reveals the tender side of Evelyn and deals with the impact of the myriad of deaths witnessed by the Doctor's companions and what it can do to their emotional well-being. As they might say, come for the music, stay for the plot. The last on my official list of must-listen Sixth Doctor audios is Thicker Than Water, written by Paul Sutton and featuring both Evelyn and Mel. Though really it should be listened to after listening to Armaments for War, I'm putting it on here because Thicker Than Water is one of those stories that will give you a look at the Doctor in a whole new light. And when it comes to the Sixth Doctor, that new light is one of the main sides that was missing from the original TV version, the softer side of the impetuous man who can rub you the wrong way if you don't know he has one. It was after Thicker Than Water that I, personally, fell fully in love with the Sixth Doctor's character and realized how much potential he had to be one of the best. The plot itself involves politics, deception, the concept of family and loyalty, and the moral code of the medical industry. In essence, it's definitely worth a listen. Although that's the last on the official list, I felt the need to mention one more Sixth Doctor audio. This particular audio is really simply written for the fans who know the history of Who, both inside the Whoniverse and the politics outside of it. The story is called The Ratings War, and if that alone doesn't give you an idea of what it's about, then let me clarify. It was written by Steve Lyons, and it's a not-so-subtle jab at the politics that originally pushed Colin Baker out of his role as the Doctor on television, as well as eventually putting the show on hiatus for many, many years. Though rife with humor that can be appreciated by all, The Ratings War is an audio for the diehard fan, and will have you in stitches if you know its source material. Well, that's all for now. If you've gotten all the way through my lengthy reviews, thank you for your patience. And I hope it comes in handy if or when you choose to go shopping for Sixth Doctor audios. On a side note unrelated to audio reviews, in my last post I mentioned looking for a Who group in Riverside, California. Well, since then, with the help of a few other sci-fi fans, I started a group called the Riverside Sci-Fi Association, which will be meeting once a month to watch and discuss science fiction and science fantasy. Though we're a general group and not specific to Doctor Who, the majority of fans are fans of Doctor Who itself, and we're always looking for more Who fans to join us. Please visit us online at community.livejournal.com/riversidescifi, all one word. Or follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/riversidescifi. Well, that's it. Hope you're all well, and I'll catch you next time. Bye.
Wow. Thank you.
That's awesome. One of my favorite Six Doctor audios is Blood Tide. In particular, I'm a fan of the Silurians and Sea Devils, so to have a Silurian story, to see them make a return and battle the Six Doctor was pretty cool. That's my two cents.
It was good to that she included Rob Sherman's Jubilee in there as well, since we just had him on earlier on the show, so it's good to tie it in this episode of Doctor Who Podshock. So once again, we do thank you for... We can't review everything that's out there, so it's always good to get some listener reviews, and we are very appreciative of it. So if you have a review or other feedback, you can always send us feedback. Once again, the Podshock public call box is 206-600-6517, and the email address to send your feedback is feedback@podshock.net. So I think that might round out the show right now. It's getting kind of late in the show. So remember, you can follow us on Twitter. You can follow James at twitter.com/JamesNorton. You can follow Ken at twitter.com/KenDeep. As for myself, you can follow me at twitter.com/LewisTrapani. And of course, for all your Doctor Who news and information about the podcast, you can follow Doctor Who Podshock on Twitter at twitter.com/podshock. And of course, you can follow us all on our website, thegallifreyanembassy.org or podshock.net. Both will bring you to the same place. We have news and information there in between podcasts. If you want to stay on top of everything and also more information, forums, everything is there. Visit gallifreyanembassy.org or podshock.net. Until next time, this is Doctor Who Podshock. Thank you for joining us, and this is Lewis Trapani and with Ken Deep and James Norton.
Cheers, everyone.
Cheers, everybody.
You have been listening to Doctor Who Podshock, presented by the fan-run GallifreyanEmbassy.org. Doctor Who is owned and trademarked by the BBC. Doctor Who Podshock is not affiliated with the BBC in any way. Come back next time for another exciting and informative episode of Doctor Who Podshock. You can email us at feedback@podshock.net. Doctor Who Podshock theme music by Jeff Smith at thejeffsmith.com. This has been a production of Art Trap Productions, brought to you by the Gallifreyan Embassy, and has been made possible by supporting subscribers and donations from listeners like you.
I can't waste any more time. Things to do, places to go.